everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation, brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, you are really starting off 2017 very well, may I add you, because this is a beautiful podcast that I'm sure, or hopefully, you're going to enjoy. But if you want to know the specifics about what this podcast is all about, it is about the latest news that happened this week, or even the week beforehand, because the whole thing is going to be a bit of a mix and match of what happened during the first week of 2017 and the last week of 2016. So it's going to be a little bit of a mix of both. So first things first, I'm going to be discussing about the unfortunate passing of Tyrus Wong. So we're going to take a moment to reflect upon this man's career. Then we will be looking into the second teaser trailer of Cars 3, which, no, there are no deaths of any important characters. This is not the one where you're going to see Mater dying or anything like that. And then afterwards, we have a bit of a confirmation regarding the animated Spider-Man movie that Sony Pictures Animation is making. And then we are going to be looking at another trailer. This time it's going to be about Yu-Gi-Oh! The Dark Side of Dimensions. And finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, first things first, we are going to be looking upon one of, or probably the last significant death that occurred in 2016. Now, one of the big things that people will remember that year is how stars have been falling from the sky just one by one, and so many celebrity deaths has occurred. I mean, we're talking about a list that includes like David Bowie, Prince, Alan Rickman, Gene Wilder, and just so much more. There have been a lot of people that the large popularity of the world, well, the large population of the world, they pretty much look upon those people very highly, and they do have a significant importance in our modern culture, and it's really sad to see them go. However, in the last week of 2016, it is almost as if death decided he wanted to go in a massive shopping spree and just grab whatever he can get. Like, it's almost as if death was in Canada and really wanted to take advantage of the Boxing Week sales. So that's why we heard at the end of 2016, when people were mourning of the death of many people, which would include Carrie Fisher, also known as Princess Leia, her mother the day after, Debbie Reynolds. There was also the author of the Plague Dogs and Watership Down, Richard Adams. And then there was this man. And out of all the deaths that occurred, this is probably the one that has the most significance in animation. Not necessarily as tragic as the death of Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher, considering like the dude really died old, but it is still sad to see him go. And I'm talking, of course, about Tyrus Wong. Now, what basically happened was rather bittersweet in a way. Like I said, it's really sad to see him go, but it's stated here, using my source in Variety, that Tyrus died peacefully at his home, surrounded by his loving daughters Kim, Kay, and Tai Ling. He was 106 years old. So if anything, I think it's really safe to say that Tyrus lived a good full life. I mean, when you go down at 106, like, you know, you live a good life. You got a good full life going right there. So, at least he lived very fully. You know, it's not like with Carrie Fisher, where her death was just so sudden and she would pass away very young at the age of 60. Now, some of you might be wondering, who is Tyrus Wong? I'm probably sure that some of you haven't even heard of the name Tyrus Wong. Well, the thing is that the dude is actually known as a pioneering artist. And in the animation field, or even in the art field, his work is very influential, very inspiring, and very beautiful. I mean, this is a very important figure in the art industry in general. So much so that I even saw that CNN actually had to report that Tyrus Wong passed away. Freaking CNN! That's how much of a big deal that is. Now, if you guys don't know, Tyrus Wong is an artist. Actually, gotta be going into my source. This time I'm gonna go with, where would be a good idea? I got several sources here, talking about Tyrus Wong, so just to give myself a better idea. You know what? Okay, I'm gonna stick to, Variety here. So, Wong was born in China before immigrating to the Bay Area at age 9. By the way, he was born in 1910, by the way, since he was 106. From there, he went to art school on a scholarship, followed by accepting a low-level animation job in 1938. After hearing about Walt Disney's Bambi project, he put together some paintings of deer in a forest, which impressed Walt enough to use them as inspirations for the film. The animated classic isn't all Wong is known for, though. He also worked on films like Rebel Without a Cause, The Green Berets, and The Wild Bunch. Then let me just take a little moment to go into D23, because that actually also contains a bit of information right over here. Tyrus worked for Warner Brothers for more than 25 years before taking on an early retirement. But the legend never truly stopped working. Tyrus exhibited and sold watercolors, designed Christmas cards, illustrated magazine covers, painted ceramics, and designed, constructed, and flew kites. At an incredible 105 years old, Tyrus was known to fly kites at beaches along the coast of Southern California. Tyrus received several awards and accolades in his lifetime, and in 2001 was recognized by the Walt Disney Company as a Disney legend. I think I do have a little bit more regarding some of his awards and his later legacy. Going back to Variety, in 2001, Wong was named a Disney legend, and in 2013, he has his artwork featured in the Walt Disney Family Museum. In October of this year, or October of 2016, Wong received two honors at the Asian World Film Festival. He was awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award on the opening day, with the following day, his actual birthday, being the screening of the documentary about him titled Tyrus, directed by Pam Tom. On top of that, Nelson Coates, the president of the Art Directors Guild, commented, "On behalf of the Art Directors Guild, I am very saddened to share news of the loss of our highly talented friend, Tyrus Wong. His work and life inspired so many of us with his passion, originality, and creativity. Deepest condolences are extended to his family and many friends at this time." According to the statement, the Art Directors Guild will present a tribute to Mr. Wong at his award ceremony on February 11th. And let me just tell you guys right now that, like, of course, the biggest thing that a lot of people will recognize Tyrus Wong for was having his art be the inspiration for the look that we have for Bambi. And let me tell you right now, looking at his artwork, like, I just did Google Images, like, I went to Google Images and I just wrote Tyrus Wong art. Like, when you look at it, like, it is beautiful. Like, there's a bit of a simplicity to it, but there's also this elegance, this beauty, this charm. I mean, it's just absolutely wonderful. And when you look at it, just by the style alone, you can immediately recognize that it is Bambi. Not necessarily because there is a deer in there, but more because of how it looks. The use of mostly the use of his art, how like everything is just brushed, how everything pretty much looks like the way that the like he designed the forest, and especially I would say the use of color, where a lot of it can be a bit light. It's not like immediately popping bright colors, but there is a little bit of that, like those big recognizable colors. Like it still has this tremendous beauty in them, and you could tell, like, when you look at it, the Disney artist has perfectly recreated the look of Tyrus Wong's art, and go interpret that into Bambi. Now, say what you will about Bambi, you could say that it is one of the greatest animated features of all time, or you can also say that it's a boring piece of crap that's mostly about cute, funny animals and all that kind of stuff. I understand, but nobody can ever deny that the animation in there is just absolutely gorgeous. Like, oh my god! Like this is one of the few examples of like masterfully crafted animation, and not just by the look of the nature itself, or even just by the animation of characters like Bambi or Thumper or whatever, just like everything about it. And like with the help of you could definitely tell the impact that Tyrus Wong had just by the looks of things. If you do Google images on Tyrus Wong's work, like you could see many of the artwork that he has done, and how that was immediately translated into the Disney film. This could range from like Bambi meeting Thumper, or there's like this really powerful one that I see right here where it's pretty much like you get the ending scene where Bambi is in the middle of the forest and everything's on fire. Like that, like this is powerful. Like that's the best way to put it. And then like you got something that is very elegant at the same time, where it's just you see a deer and it's in the middle of winter, and you see a bit of cherry blossoms on the side, or maybe it's cherry blossoms, I don't know. Like you see like it's just a bunch of branches and they have like pink petals on them, so that's why I kind of assume that it's a bit of cherry blossoms. But no, this is actually very beautiful. Like his artwork is just a true sight to behold. And yeah, in a way, Disney did lose a powerful and amazing artist. And I mean, it's not every day that you would have someone that would actually still be alive in this day and age who would go and work on something like Bambi. You know, like maybe some of the voice actors, like the kids who would provide the voice of like either Bambi or Thumper or stuff like that. Like, sure, you could expect them to be like pretty much old nowadays, but having a legitimate animator like whose art actually inspired that movie, like that's amazing. And I mean, like the fact that the dude was still alive and someone like who was very important to the production of movies like Bambi and plenty of other projects at the same time, it, you know, it's just absolutely gorgeous. So if anything, like I'll probably have a few homeworks for you guys to do right after this episode ends, but I just want to mention like one of them that you got to do, guys. Like seriously, just go online and look up the many artworks done by Tyrus Wong. It is just purely beautiful. Like if you're ever looking for a nature piece, like if you want to do some art yourself of anything that is set in the forest, no matter what the season may be, summer, spring, winter, or fall, just look him up and you'll find some beautiful artwork, or at least enough to get you inspired. It's just purely amazing. Also, on top of that, I just want to add something, something that I want to mention and actually quote The thing is that on the D23 website, when they made their entire tribute to Tyrus Wong, there is a little bit of a passage that I do want to read you guys that is actually really worth mentioning. It is hard to imagine a world of animation without the inspirational works of Tyrus Wong, Walt Disney Archives director Becky Klein said. Though his delicate and sophisticated creations, from pastels and watercolors to complex and colorful kites, Tyrus's art helped to shape and inspire numerous projects and artists during his lifetime. He was a true legend of the craft, an artist who was bound only by his limits of his own imagination. We are deeply saddened to hear of Tyrus passing, but take solace in knowing that his art will forever remain a pillar of creativity to help inspire future generations. Our deepest sympathies and condolences go out to his family and colleagues. And you know, I think Becky Klein really said it best here, that the dude is actually a very inspirational artist. And yeah, like, just all I can ask for you guys is that if you want to pay homage to the man, just look up his art, and hopefully it could actually inspire you to make some nature pieces right there. So yeah, we have definitely lost a legend, but his legacy will forever live on, even older than him. Okay, so the next thing we have for you guys, we are actually going to go back to Cars 3. Now, if you guys remember last time, and I'm sure you cannot forget this, Cars 3 decided to go and shock the world with the first teaser trailer. For some reason, they decided that, you know what, like, people are not really going to care about Cars 3, so they decided to level up to grab people's attention and just flat out threaten to endanger the life of its main character, Lightning McQueen. And my God, did it work. Even people who are not necessarily fans of the Cars franchise, like, they would even hate the Cars movies, and they would look at it going, oh my God, is Lightning McQueen okay? Because I've stated before, like, when the trailer was released, that, yeah, sure, a lot of people don't like Cars, but they don't hate it to the point to wish death upon, like, any of the characters in there. Like, maybe Mater, but not really Lightning McQueen. They don't want to see Lightning McQueen legitimately die. And that's almost what they got in the first teaser trailer. And surprisingly enough, like, right out of the blue, apparently Pixar decided to release the second teaser trailer for Cars 3. But admittedly, it doesn't leave as much of an impact on the, it doesn't necessarily leave much of an impact as much as the first teaser trailer did. Like, that trailer right there is telling us that Lightning McQueen might die. In this one, however, it's a little bit different. They're treating it more like a car commercial. And I don't mean like a commercial for the Cars franchise. I mean like legitimately like they want to sell the car. Because basically, it's just three different mini trailers, basically. And they're all kind of the same thing, where you mostly get like a look around the car itself. Like, you got three different cars, one of which is Lightning McQueen, and he's in good condition, by the way. He doesn't flip over, or he doesn't get destroyed. And then you got two brand new characters, one of which being Jackson Storm, and the other one being Cruz Ramirez. And what we mostly get is that we look all around the car as if they're trying to sell it to us. And we also see at the same time a lot of the branding that's on each of the cars. Like, with Jackson Storm, you see that he's sponsored by Igniter, Liquid Adrenaline. And when you see Cruz Ramirez, you see that she was actually sponsored by Rusty's. And then when you have Lightning McQueen, well, you see all the different stickers that he has on him everywhere, including like a few of his logos of Lightning McQueen, and also a lot of the Piston Cups that he won in the past, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, basically, all, like, everything about it is to look more into the physical presence of the car of all of three of these characters, basically. That's all that they're pretty much showing. It doesn't really tell you anything about the movie itself. It's just mostly showing you how these characters look and the design of the car. In a way, you could say that it's a little bit of car porn, not like actual porn in a sense, but I mean more like car, like this is the kind of commercial that's really appealing to car fanatics, where you actually do take a good look at the sides of it, you look at the rear of it, the front, and all that kind of stuff. Like, you see the smooth, sleek design of these cars. Like, this is a trailer that's made especially for car aficionados. This is the kind of teaser trailer that's made especially for them. And yeah, like, there really isn't much to say about it. I mean, yeah, like, they did it, and I'm sure, like, this would actually be useful for, like, if you want to show it in the middle of, like, a NASCAR race or, like, an F1 formula race or something like that. But other than that, there really isn't anything special. If anything, it just looks more like they want to sell these cars than anything. Like, you know, they would go and, the only thing that's actually missing is that they didn't include, like, some kind of, like, manly narrator, someone like either Matthew McConaughey or John Hamm. Like, you would hear that, like, that booming low voice trying to tell you to go and get the all-new Mitsubishi Jackson Storm with zero emission, and you could go and get it right now at your local retailer for just $299 a month. You know, like, just something like that. And, yeah, I mean, it doesn't leave as much of an impact as something like the first teaser trailer. Like, I think if we're gonna get something that would explain more about what Cars 3 itself is, then at this point, we gotta wait a little bit longer. Maybe it'll be a few weeks, maybe it'll be in a few months. But yeah, we just have to wait a little bit until a full actual trailer would actually show up and explain to us what Cars 3 will be about. Because so far, the most that we're gonna get is that Lightning McQueen's life is in danger. That's pretty much all that we know. But yeah, basically, that's pretty much all that I can gather with this Cars 3 teaser trailer. If you're a fan of cars and stuff like that, not just the franchise, but the automobiles themselves, then you could definitely go check this new trailer out. And if you guys are actually excited to know when this will actually be released, then you'll have to wait until June of 2017, or actually, I don't even have to say 2017 anymore. It's actually June of this year that this movie will be released. Okay, so for our next story, we are going to be heading to Sony Pictures Animation. However, they didn't necessarily announce anything. They just put up one little thing, and a lot of fans notice what they're doing, and now there could be an 80 to 90% confirmation that this is basically what Sony is actually doing. If you don't really get what I'm going with, allow me to explain in detail. Now, the thing is that Sony Pictures Animation has recently put up a casting call for a project that is codenamed Cabin Fever. And the way that they describe what this Cabin Fever thing is about, it's stated that it chronicles the adventures of two unlikely friends, Terrence and Pete. And that's pretty much it. But for the casting call that they got for Terrence and Pete, just listen to what it is described. So, first off, for Terrence, they are pretty much looking for a male between 13 and 15 who is described as a young African-American / Puerto Rican teen from Brooklyn. He is new to this suburban school and now feeling out of place, overwhelmed, pressured with new responsibilities, dealing with puberty while trying to fit in. He must do his best to stay out of trouble. Along the way in developing his identity, he's losing old friends, but now making a new one, Pete. And as for Pete, per se, He is described as someone who is 13 to 16 as a young and slightly geeky Asian American teen. He is smart, sweet, and encouraging, although very unlike any of his friends. The friends Terrence had in his old Brooklyn neighborhood. Pete proves to be a good fit for Terrence, making good decisions. So a lot of people are looking at this casting, and there's something that seems oddly familiar about it. Now, everybody basically looked at the schedule that Sony Pictures Animation had between 2017 and 2020, and they noticed that this can't really be an original movie per se, because the only original animated features that Sony Animation is going to put out is going to be The Emoji Movie and Vivo, which that one is going to be coming out in 2020. So by looking at this, this seems to be something that, okay, they seem to be at the point that they know what they're doing with the story, so it must be something that's going to be a bit recent. Like, not anything that's going to be coming out this year per se, but something that, like, it has already been announced and they're working on it for a while. And so, a lot of people concluded that this must be the untitled animated Spider-Man movie, the one that does not connect with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And what's actually very interesting is that this actually confirms something that has long been rumored, that apparently the Spider-Man that will be featured here will not be Peter Parker, but instead it's going to be Miles Morales. For those of you who don't know, Miles Morales is actually an African-American kid who would end up being Spider-Man, a little bit like a successor to Peter Parker. So what I'm trying to say, and what this whole news is pretty much about, is that now there seems to be an 80 to 90% chance that Sony Pictures Animation's Spider-Man is going to be black. That's basically the whole idea of it. And as for the Pete character, it's not going to be Peter Parker, but it's going to be another character that appeared in the Miles Morales Spider-Man comics named Ganke. And so with all that said, there's something like, there's something about it that I look at it and, like, honestly, I just, like, there's a feeling about, I get this feeling that, honestly, I just can't believe that I want to say this, and in a way, it just feels embarrassing for me, but, okay, screw it, here it goes. Okay. Sony, I notice what you might be doing here, and you want to do something that is completely different than anything that we've had before, like, that's completely different than what we got with the previous Spider-Man films, whether it be the ones starring Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, or even the ones that we could be getting with Tom Holland. And honestly, if you want to do something that is completely different and completely out there from any of the other Spider-Man or superhero movies that you're doing, go ahead and do it. Like, absolutely, like, try something new. Be like, just stand out from the crowd, be different, just go, like, I highly encourage it, Sony. Like, this could actually be a fantastic idea. And the reason why I say that is because, like, you know, this could really spice things up when it comes to Spider-Man movies that we're getting, because, like, for a while, we know that what we have been getting for so long with the story of Peter Parker, like, we've already been through so many times the story of Uncle Ben and the origins of Spider-Man with the wrestling and all that kind of stuff. Like, we know how it goes. So, trying to do something new, it's definitely fantastic. And the factor of bringing in Miles Morales, bringing in a brand new person to become Spider-Man, like, it's really gonna spice things up, especially it'll introduce to brand new audiences that Spider-Man doesn't have to be just Peter Parker. It could be another kid who got bit by that radioactive spider. So it could definitely work out. Now, admittedly, I'm more of a casual Spider-Man fan. I'm not someone like who's like a huge fan. Like I have a high knowledge on it. Like honestly, I haven't really read any of the comics. At the most, like I've seen the movies and I've seen some of the TV shows. That's most of my knowledge on Spider-Man. Like I know a good bunch, but I don't really know a lot about the details. It would require a lot of research to do, especially for a superhero as prolific as Spider-Man, per se. But yeah, like, this could actually be a great idea to really expand upon the Spider-Man universe in a cinematic sense to introduce audiences to brand new ideas regarding who Spider-Man could be and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the factor that they want to bring in an African-American person or even just a person of color to be playing as a role as iconic as Spider-Man, you know, that would actually be awesome. It would actually be fantastic, you know? But there is actually a little bit of something that I am worried about. Like, even though it is great that we are now going to get a Black Spider-Man, there is something about it that I am a little bit worried about that might spread a little bit of controversy. That not everybody is going to be too happy over the fact that there's going to be a Spider-Man movie in which Spidey is going to be black. And I am talking, of course, regarding those angry Trump supporters and those neo-Nazis, also known as the alt-right. Now, basically, what has been going on, like, in terms of movies, those are always the idiotic people that seem to be so pissed off at whatever big motion picture has been released out there that doesn't star a white male. Like, no matter what, like, if it's a big movie and it doesn't star any of them, like, they just throw their crap no matter what. Like, it's pretty much the big reason why they're so pissed off at movies like the Ghostbusters reboot, or even like the new Star Wars movies. Like they legitimately want to try to boycott the Star Wars films just because it no longer stars a white male. Like instead, now it features characters like Rey and Finn, where we got a female and a black man featured, or a person of color, or even in Rogue One that just recently came out. Like now, again, it features a woman and another person of color, this time being a Latino with a very thick accent, mind you. So yeah, like the thing is, I could imagine that like they could look at this and they would just be pissed off over the fact that Spider-Man is black. Like even though, yes, there is a bit of context, but like these guys are freaking idiots. They don't care about, like, what context it is. They're just going to be pissed off over the fact that Spider-Man is not a white guy, and now Spider-Man is pretty much going to be, this black man is now replacing Spider-Man to be Spider-Man. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing, is that that's the one factor that I am a little bit worried about. And by the way, I just want to mention regarding the Ghostbusters front is that I understand that, like, the people who don't like the Ghostbusters reboot, of course not all of them hate it because they're women, but at least the ones who are getting, like, the reason why, like, it has often gathered a really bad reputation is that, unfortunately, there are some people who did, like, who legitimately hate it just by the factor that because of the fact that women are the stars of the movie. And that's because of those deplorable Trump supporters and those neo-Nazis known as the alt-right. Like, that, it's because of those people, that like those horrible human beings that, you know, that they've gathered a bad reputation for hating, like that they basically really made a mess out of the Ghostbusters controversy. Like, that whole thing was just a disaster in itself, really. But the thing is that, like, I am a little bit worried to what's going to happen with it, but I don't know, who knows, but like I said before, like, technically, Sony Animation did not fully confirm that, that their Spider-Man movie will feature Miles Morales, or if it's just gonna be Peter Parker in general, who knows, but, yeah, that's my only concern so far, is if, Like, they do announce that it's going to be Miles Morales, and there are going to be some angry, idiotic Americans that are going to complain that Spider-Man is black. Like, it doesn't matter if the writing is going to be fantastic or if the animation is going to be phenomenal. It's just the factor that Spider-Man is black enough to trigger, like, dumber Americans. That's my only concern. But then again, like, their words don't matter. No one really cares what they think. And especially the box office doesn't care what they think. Like, recently when they tried to boycott something like Rogue One, like, it ended off being a major hit. Like, it started off with $130 million on its opening weekend. So, clearly, like, when they try to boycott something, no one cares what they think. They're absolutely useless as human beings. So, it doesn't really matter. So, it doesn't really matter what they say, really. So, maybe it's not that big of a concern. But, honestly, like, even, okay, like, maybe it wouldn't be that big of an issue. Like, if they ever raise their voice that they're just angry that Spider-Man is black, then a lot of people will just shut them up. Their voices are useless. No one cares what they think. So, you know what? Screw it. Sony, I encourage you, go ahead and make Spider-Man Miles Morales. It'll be a fantastic choice. So, if you guys are excited to see who Spider-Man could be in the animation world, then you'll have to wait until at the end of 2016, close to Christmas time, that apparently that will be Sony Animation's present to us. Okay, so for our next story right here, we got another trailer, but unlike the last trailer with Cars 3, it's not necessarily one that just takes a quick look into the characters. This one is more of a legitimate trailer. This is one in which, like, we know more of the story. We take a preview of what this movie in general could be about. And I'm talking, of course, of Yu-Gi-Oh! The Dark Side of Dimensions, which is going to bring back the original cast of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Characters. I'm talking, it's no longer going to be, like, from the second or the third or the fourth or the fifth or even the sixth dimension right now, or the sixth, not dimension, I mean the sixth, like, the sixth series. I mean, this is going back to the original series where we have characters like going back with original characters like Yugi, Kaiba, Joey, Tristan, Taya, Bakura, and all those characters. So we're pretty much going back into that one. And in the trailer that we saw right here, basically it gives us a little bit of a summary that there's apparently this new villain that's coming in that's trying to take over and trying to develop a new world in his own image, namely Aigami. So it's going to be up to Yugi and his friends to go and face Aigami through, of course, a duel of duel monster cards. And with that said, though, with this trailer in particular, we actually do get a little bit of a preview of some of the English dub voice actors, which I would like to remind you, though, that just recently as well, it's not just the fact, like, this piece of news is not just the factor that they released a brand new trailer, it's also the factor that on the official Facebook page, they have actually confirmed that the original English dub cast is going to be coming back for the feature film. Now, we have already gotten confirmation before that people like Dan Green, Eric Stewart, and Wayne Grayson are going to be returning as the voice of Yugi Moto, Seto Kaiba, and Joey Wheeler, respectively. But this trailer has actually showed us that that some people are coming back. Like, we hear that, well, actually, going to be taking a bit from my source on Anime News Network, that they have brought back Amy Birnbaum to be playing as Taya Gardner, Mark Thompson is coming back as Duke Devlin, Ted Lewis is returning as Ryo Bakura, and that they also got, they also showed a little bit of a preview of Aigami's voice, which in English is going to be played by Daniel J. Edwards. We didn't hear much about some of the other characters. Like, we don't hear Tristan's voice yet. We didn't hear any of the other voices yet. Like, maybe if other characters are coming back, like, either if, like, some of the smaller ones, like, maybe Weevil Underwood or Rex, Rex something, but his name, his last name escapes me, or, like, Rex, My Valentine, Merrick, Ishtar, or any of those people. Like, we haven't got a confirmation if those characters are going to be coming back or if their voice actors will be returning as well. But you know what's actually very interesting is that this week, not only did I witness this trailer, but there was also a clip beforehand that Crunchyroll actually released showing a little bit of a preview of, like, just a small clip of this movie in particular, where we see that it's set directly after the original series ended, where we see just Yugi reflecting back on the old days, like pretty much the finale of that whole series, where he looks back and he actually misses Yami, who was, like, throughout the whole series the Pharaoh, the spirit of the Pharaoh that was inside the Millennium Puzzle that Yugi kept on carrying. So, like he pretty much reflects on that, and, like, we see some of his friends, like Taya and Joey, trying to comfort him, and, you know, telling him that things are all right, and, like, I'm sure this is what Atem would wanted, and stuff like that. And, oh my god, I gotta admit, just honestly, looking at that clip, man, like, it was a big mix of nostalgia and massive feels. Like, you know, like, I'm just coming back to a bit of my childhood, in a sense, like, going, like, we're finally coming back to see, like, how these old characters are doing. Like, how is Yugi doing? How is Taya doing? How is Joey doing? How is Tristan doing? Or even how is Kaiba doing? You know, just looking at that clip, it makes me want to go back and, you know, revisit this world. Like, I would honestly be interested to see what the Dark Side of Dimensions is. But on top of that, there is one thing that I would like to mention regarding this movie, is that, my god, did the animation received a massive quality boost. Like, the animation in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Series, you know, it's good enough as it is. It's fine for an anime TV show. But what we got in the movie, oh boy, they really put up their A game, I must say. Like, it is actually crazy good, not gonna lie. You know, it's a little bit like, you know, it's a little bit like with Pyramid of Light, where you notice that there is a little bit more of a quality boost in terms of the animation on the monsters. The use of color is a lot more rich. The animation itself, like, the character animation, is a lot more smoother, so this is definitely an upgrade to what we had in the series. So this is actually pretty interesting, and with all that said, I am actually pretty interested to know, like, what this could be all about, and if I would actually find a screening about it, then I could be interested to check this one out, honestly. Like, this could actually be pretty good, and, yeah, overall, like, this immediately, like, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Fan in me, like, is really interested to see what this has to offer. So, if you guys are interested to go and check out Yu-Gi-Oh! The Dark Side of Dimensions, whether it be the English dub or whatever, it will be released in theaters, limited theaters, by the way, only appearing in 500 theaters around US and Canada on January 27th. But for those of you in the UK and Ireland, then you'll just have to wait a little bit longer on February 1st. And, yeah, this is gonna be pretty awesome, I must say. And so finally, we now have Matt's Pick of the Week. And so for this week, I don't necessarily have a news story, but instead, it's actually a really interesting article that I stumbled upon, and it actually grabbed a lot of attention, and this is just a small element in animation that so far, it has grown bigger and bigger to the point that It almost seems like a problem per se now. Like, it's starting to be to the point where this little piece is starting to really overstay its welcome. And there are some animated films, however, that they just took it a little bit too far per se. And I'm talking about an article on avclub.com by Jesse Hassinger that's called "Why Are Animated Dance Party Endings So Goddamn Annoying?" And if you guys don't know what I am talking about, allow me to just summarize the whole history of what this dance party ending is all about. Now, the thing is that normally when the movie would wrap up, at the end of the film, it's pretty common that we would see characters, or animated characters per se, that they would just do a little dance and sing a song at the same time. Now, it's not just in animated films. Like, normally they would do just quick little things. Like, for example, at the end of The Jungle Book, when you see Baloo and Bagheera just dancing off to Bare Necessities. Or even something that's a little bit more romantic, like with Sleeping Beauty or Beauty and the Beast, where Aurora and Philip or Belle and the Beast, they would both dance together and making it a little signal that they would live happily ever after. So they would do just small stuff like that, or even like just something to wrap up the whole movie. You know, like, musicals are very guilty of doing this a lot. Like, for example, Grease actually had a bit of a dance party ending. And then you also have Return of the Jedi. That's actually a very popular example of a dance party ending. So it is actually very common. But then came Shrek, and they decided to take it to a whole new level. Now, if you guys may remember, back in 2001, Shrek was the biggest animated feature of its time. Like, this was really the movie that broke the mold that, like, pretty much signaled the very end of the Disney Renaissance, that people are no longer as enchanted about it as much as they were back in the early 90s with movies like Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast or The Little Mermaid or The Lion King and stuff like that. Now they are entering upon a brand new age with the help of Shrek, and that actually signaled a brand new way of just making movies in general. This is the one that really launched the new trend of making computer animated films and trying to make them a little bit more snarky than they used to be. And on top of that, they decided to end it off with a dance party ending. And this would be the one that would launch the ways that dance party endings would pretty much be. So, dance party endings nowadays, they would go into three different categories, or at least the use of songs that they would do. The first one is actually modern covers of classic songs. And by that, a great example is actually with Shrek, where they would actually use a Smash Mouth cover of I'm a Believer. And then there would be another one that they would do with, a good example. What's the number two that I'm trying to think of? Oh, yes. Just the popular song itself. They don't use a remix. They just want to use a popular song. A great example of that is actually the 2010 DreamWorks movie Megamind, when they would actually do I'm Bad. So they would just go and cap it all off by dancing to I'm Bad by Michael Jackson. And then the third one is an original song. Now, these are not necessarily like from musical animated features per se. They're mostly using like a song that they want to promote, that they want to connect to this movie in particular. And they like, in a way, they really want to try to promote it by doing the dance party ending. And the best example is actually just recently with DreamWorks Trolls, where they would do Can't Stop the Feeling, which is the movie that Justin Timberlake made for this movie in particular. So it's kind of a way to really promote that song and to really make it prominent in this movie. So that way, when people would think about something like Can't Stop the Feeling, they would think about the Trolls movie, basically. But then the thing is, though, is that after Shrek, we are seeing more and more and more and more animated films doing it. Like, it really started to pile up. Like, we're seeing, like, DreamWorks actually is the most guilty of doing this. Like, they would actually go ahead and do so with many of their feature films. It's not just Shrek. I already listed, like, films like Megamind and Trolls. And then it would also accumulate with other films like the Madagascar movies. And to a certain extent, even Kung Fu Panda would actually do it. Like, I remember, like, Kung Fu Panda 3 actually did so with a foreign version of Everybody Loves Kung Fu Fighting. That I know. And on top of that, it's not just DreamWorks doing it, but there are other companies that do that as well. Blue Sky would actually do it with some of the Ice Age films. Like, I remember Collision Course actually just did that not too long ago. So some of the Ice Age films would do it. The Despicable Me films are definitely guilty of doing that. And so are the Hotel Transylvania films. And even The Secret Life of Pets just recently do it. But what's actually very interesting, in this article that Jesse Hassinger wrote, it's not just about discussing about, like, dance party endings, but it's also a little bit of a slam, because you could tell that this guy actually hates DreamWorks Trolls, but he especially hates Sing. Yeah, like the recent Illumination film. Yeah, like you could tell this guy really hates that, because his argument is that those two feature films are basically just nothing but a feature-length version of those dance party endings. Like, those movies are nothing but just like an hour and a half long version of a dance party ending, which I do understand a little bit with Trolls, because the songs don't really make sense. They don't add into anything, like, they don't add much into the movie itself. But with Sing, I kind of disagree with it, honestly. Like, they actually don't even do the dance party ending. Like, what they actually do instead is that, like, with many of the pop songs that they have, they actually do have a connection to the story. Like, there is actually a point to it. But what is actually very interesting to note is that he also lists a few films that, not even I would think of, but I don't necessarily count them. Like, honestly, for me, this is a way that is a little bit acceptable to do an ending dance. Now, Jesse actually put in a couple of examples that's actually quite interesting, which includes Disney's Chicken Little and Zootopia. And in a way, yes, it is true that they are definitely guilty of doing that dance party ending. However, what makes it a bit okay is that they also play the credits at the same time. You know, like, whenever we see the characters dancing, you see, like, on the side, like, when we see the end of Zootopia, when they got tickets to go to the Gazelle concert, we see, like, on the side, like, we just see some of the characters dancing, and we see, like, oh, Chief Bogo is played by Idris Elba, and then you see, oh, Judy is played by Jennifer Goodwin, oh, Nick is played by Jason Bateman, and all that kind of stuff. You know, like, it serves a little bit of a purpose where it's not just a dance party ending, but it's simultaneously, like, showing you, like, a bit of a creative way to show you a bit of the credits. So it's a little bit like that. It has a bit of a point where, like, the main credits that they want to present, like, who are the actors, who are the directors, and who are the important people who contributed to the movies, like, they want to do a little bit more of a creative thing. So it's understandable why they would do something like in Zootopia, or even Chicken Little, in a sense. And I'm telling you, I do understand why it is a bit annoying to see those dance party endings. And I try to think a little bit of why is it technically that these dance party endings are so annoying, and why is it that they have overstayed their welcome nowadays? And there are mostly two factors that I can really think of. The reason number one why it's so annoying is because most of the time, they really contribute to nothing to the feature film. Like, honestly, there's no point in having those dance party endings. Like, you can legit take them away, and the movie would never change. Because the thing is that the movie's already done, and like now they're just really extending it with this dance party ending. Because that's kind of the whole thing, is that really it's just filler. They don't really contribute to much. It just gives animators a lot more work, and really, like, it doesn't serve a purpose. And I mean, it's really annoying whenever it's a movie that is not necessarily good per se. Like something like the recent Ice Age sequels, or even the Hotel Transylvania films, when they would do like those dance party endings, like, oh, everything is done. Okay, like normally you see that the movie is over and you're just ready to go home because you just want to get away from like having more of a bad taste from a bad movie per se. But no, they got to extend it further to see like animated, like to see all these characters just dancing around and having fun. You know, just doing stuff like that, you know, if anything, it's just padding, and it just makes the movie a lot more longer than it probably should. And the second reason why I think they are, like, a lot of people claim that they are annoying is because, like, yes, nowadays it's really repetitive, but it's also because it's tradition. Like, many of the movies that you can think of, like, the prime examples, they are a part of not just one movie, but a part of a franchise. Like, we see them do it over and over is because it's tradition. Because the first movie ended off that way, they want to end it, like, the sequels want to end it off that way, too. That's why we're seeing, like, with the Shrek movies, they would do the dance party ending over and over and over. And then you would also see something like Despicable Me. Like, they would do it over and over because it's tradition. And then you would see Hotel Transylvania. They would do it over and over because it's tradition. Like, everything about it is tradition. So whenever, like, a movie would end up being really popular and would end up having sequels, they want to stay true and, like, have a bit of the spirit of the original feature film. So most of the time, they want to do something like, you know, they want to do something that seems similar, something like people would expect from it. So that's why they would do a dance party ending. It's because it's tradition. And that's why most of the people who are guilty for it, like a lot of them, you'll find they are actually sequels. So that's mostly why, like, a lot of people would find it repetitive, is because a lot of the same characters are actually dancing as well. But what is actually very interesting is that Jesse Hassinger actually brought up a really good argument on his piece why they are actually annoying, and it actually has to do with the fact that it's animation. Because here's the thing, with animated films, you can pretty much make the characters do whatever you want. Like the limit in animation, it's pretty much a lot less, like, you can do more with animation than you can with live action. That's basically the whole idea that Jesse is trying to say. So that's why, like, whenever you would see a movie that would specialize where you see, like, these amazing dance numbers, like, for example, like, if you go and watch La La Land, you would be completely enchanted by the choreography that's in there. Or when you would see like a big musical that's based on a Broadway show, like Hairspray or Producers or Chicago or something like that, like, you would be completely dazzled by the dance numbers because it's live action. Like, these are legit people actually doing the steps and stuff like that. But in animation, that enchantment, that dazzle, it's no longer really there, because technically, like, there is no limitations in animation. Like, the characters are not limited to what they can do with the body. They can basically go and do whatever they want, per se. So it's not really as amazing to see animated characters dance than it is to see live-action people dancing, you know? Like, there is a massive difference. And that is actually a very, very good argument, I must say. But, yeah, honestly, overall, like, I do understand how this, honestly, I'm gonna call it for what it is. It's basically a cliche that really did overstay its welcome. Like, it started out fine, like when Shrek was released, like, it was doing brand new things, and nobody really saw this in animated features before, where they would end it off in this special, like, modern-style dance party. But nowadays, when people are watching it, it just adds in as, like, a poor excuse to really modernize an animated feature. Like, that's one of the biggest problems that many animated films are having nowadays. It's mostly the factor of how, like, a lot of them are trying to be hip, they're trying to be cool, they're trying to be more relatable to young kids. Like, they want to try to say something and really try to shove down their throats, trying to say stuff like, Ice Age is cool, or Hotel Transylvania is cool, you know, stuff like that. Like, they really want to try to shove it down audiences' throats. And with that dance party ending, when they would try to include, like, this new pop song or whatever, like, that's another factor where it feels like they want to try to relate to modern audiences and try to be perceived as cool and hip. That's why it feels like they really have overstayed its welcome. That's why it's not necessarily as effective per se. And like I said, that's why it, like, nowadays, a lot of the people that are doing it are just sequels. So chances are, like, the animated films that could be doing it in the future, like, we'll see, like, maybe Nut Job 2 or Despicable Me 3 or Hotel Transylvania 3 or even The Secret Life of Pets 2 are going to be doing the same thing. They did it last time, but now they're doing it now. And even at that, like, the argument that I put in that it is more acceptable that they would do it during the credits and stuff like that, sometimes it doesn't work. Like, I just realized that right now. Like, sometimes they would do the ending dance during the credits. Sometimes it's not necessarily good, and they would be perceived as desperately trying to be hip. And the Nut Job is the biggest one that's actually guilty of that. Like, I just remembered, like, when during the credits, when they were trying to play Gangnam Style, like not too long after that, the song itself, like, really passed its prime and stuff like that. Like it does feel more like a desperate attempt to be hip with the cool kids rather than to, you know, simultaneously act as the credits, you know? Sometimes it doesn't work. So yeah, like, this whole trend, it really is getting annoying, and nowadays we're just gonna see sequels do it, and once those sequels are gonna be done, I'm sure, like, this whole trend is gonna be done and over with, so so let's just hope for the best that this trend will pretty much be done, or at least learn how to improve it. Just, you know, do it right, at the very least. But anyways, that is pretty much all that I've got for this week, so I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You could go and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is look for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Also, at the same time, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, go ahead and try to rate and review this episode. That would be wonderful of you. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, hit that little like button and leave us a comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Now, tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!